There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 503, May 19th, 2011. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by the donation button located on the front page of the F1 Weekly website. Click on it. Donate. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, blown diffusers are back in the limelight. Sutil still has a drive at Force India. Because if not, he will punch them in the nose. Can Fernando Alonso go all the way in Barca? And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi. Himself, Mr. Hamid. And happy birthday to Simon Pagenaud. Which was actually yesterday, but hey.
Yeah, close enough.
You know, he's a friend of F1 Weekly's on Facebook. Simon gets my happiness. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
Absolutely charming. We have a race this weekend.
You're all decked out in the Renault garb today.
That's right. It's called We're Supporting Our Team, Steven. Renault could do well in Barcelona.
They could.
But then we still have Red Bull to deal with.
Well, it's like we don't worry about Red Bull. We race but against everybody
it's
else.
It's okay because Red Bull is powered by
Renault.
Régie Renault. So, it's going to be an outstanding weekend. Even when we have 1 week off, I begin to suffer some pains.
Yeah, you know, I don't really mind the 1 week breaks as much. It's the 3 week ones that kind of get me because you're kind of like, especially this year, you're kind of geared up for it. Like, okay, we had a race and now I got to wait 3 weeks. What?
Yeah, but still, I'm excited. Barcelona, España, Fernando country. The people, the passion, it's going to be there, it's going to be electric, and it should be a great race.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun to get onto the Barcelona track with the new formulae, with the tires and the pit stops, to kind of move things around a little bit. You know, of the tracks that we have, Spain often was one of the more processional races just because of the track layout itself and the fact that it is on the narrow side.
Now, and don't forget the winds.
Oh, yeah. Well, that always messes with people.
Yes. And, of course, our guest steward for this race will be Mark Blundell.
Should be interesting. Wonder if we'll get anything to look into.
Well, it's going to be exciting. And I'm not sure, but I think this is Mark Blundell's first.
Yes, it's his first.
And, of course, he was a driver for Brabham, Ligier, Tyrrell, and McLaren between 1991 and 1995. He retired in 2003. So, good for him.
I like the fact that they're bringing back some drivers from a few years past and kind of, you know, giving them a job for a weekend.
Right, exactly. And him and Martin Brundle can chit-chat. Now, the big story, of course, for this week was the FIA coming out and saying that the blown diffusers will be reviewed and changes will be happening to the rules, which really is really the most unfair thing you could possibly
do. Oh, yeah. Well, no, that, but I am so glad that they came back later in the week and went, oh, nah, changed our mind.
I mean, why even say anything? Let it, you know, once the season starts, I think you cannot go out and start changing things.
Unless it's something that's completely radical and really fringing the edges of the, you know, truly outside the rule book. Say, the mass dampers on the Renault. Something like that, maybe? Yeah. But when everybody's doing it on the paddock and it's spicing up the racing, no, come on. You know, if you don't want to, you know, take the double diffusers, for example. I'm so glad that they didn't turn around and outlaw those last year. Because it gives the teams some place to put their developmental energies.
Well, the big talk is about the off-throttle blown diffusers, which could be a breach of our Article 3.15 of the technical regulations that outlaw movable aerodynamic devices.
Leaving the motor running, how does that a movable device?
Well, you know, I don't want to... Apparently, now the throttle is not just for accelerating, Steve. Everybody's getting sophisticated.
Well, the interesting thing that I was thinking about when I heard that was, isn't everybody using the same ECU? How were they able to convince the ECU to allow them to do that?
It's called control.
It's called, I know how to write software.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what they can do. ECU is just a machine that responds to data.
It's a little computer.
So
program it as you like.
And as you said, Formula One teams have been given a reprieve to continue using the blown diffusers freely from this weekend's Spanish Grand Prix.
So does that leave the door open for them to come back next week and go, oh, in second thought, we're going to take them away?
Well, not only that, but the biggest burden is some teams are just coming up with their own blown diffuser, like Williams, Lotus. I mean, to sit there and nip that in the bud when they've just spent millions of man hours.
Yeah, basically spent in a team for a team like Lotus, where they just burned really all their development energies for the last 2 months, and go, oh nope, can't use that.
Exactly, and which would be brutal. So yeah. I think the FIA figured it out, which is hard to believe, but maybe Jean Todt does have some control on what these people think about.
Yeah, ultimately, you may see them nipping or playing around with the rules about maintaining the throttle on in a, you know, in a brakes, you know, in a no throttle position, so that they can keep downforce on a car that's not accelerating. That you might see, I could see them really taking a closer look at and playing around with. But taking away the blown diffuser completely would just be ludicrous at this point. It's like, that's something you're going to have to, it's like the double diffuser. You're going to have to write it out of next year's spec.
That, which is much better than what they were earlier intending to do. And like Lotus, I mean, they're half of their new package, which is coming out in Spain and will continue on with, you know, Monaco and Silverstone, is of course a new exhaust system and diffuser.
Yeah, basically a revamped floor so that they can use
exactly
that.
A blown floor, the whole kit and caboodle. And you know, I just can't, I don't understand. I think they start looking, well, some teams complain they think Red Bull maybe have too much of an advantage, but in the end they don't. It's just good design.
Yeah, they're just basically, their guys have figured out the usage of one of the resources that's available in the car to improve downforce, and now everybody has to play catch up. And just, you know, give credit to Red Bull and the design team they have in place, that somebody can think far enough out of the box to go, hey, you know, if we took the exhaust gases and spit them out the front of the car, we could get more downforce.
Well, what's interesting to me is this is what you expect in Formula One. One team has it right, and everybody falls in place as soon as they can developmentally.
Right. And or they tweak it and actually make it better.
Correct. Exactly.
And get a better solution to
what they see at the front of the spear.
Exactly.
But, yeah, and the FIA shouldn't just step in and say, well, maybe they have too much of an advantage, and all the work that all the other teams are trying to catch up with that advantage goes down the tubes.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that the FIA changed their minds on this. And apparently McLaren's engineering director, Tim Goss, has admitted that the ban on off-throttle blown diffusers would hurt the performance of his team. But, of course, it would hurt the performance of a number of teams.
It would hurt everybody. Because anybody who's using it now is seeing that performance advantage and not being able to put those gases across that plane, so to speak, would be at a disadvantage. It would basically lose that, you know, 3/10 that they're getting out of the ability to get that little bit more downforce.
And once again, we're talking about the off-throttle blown diffusers, which means when they're backing off on the throttle, they map the engine to actually continue flowing gases from the engine into the diffuser to continue the downforce.
Right, which is, you know, it's got to immensely improve your slow speed cornering.
Absolutely.
Because you can carry more speed into those corners because you've got that extra oomph to hold you onto the track.
Absolutely. And I, you know what I think? Brilliant!
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that it's why I watch Formula One. I want to see someone come up with this technological tweak
that's why we watch this sport.
Yeah.
It's not Le NASCAR.
No.
Which is still carbureted, by the way. I'm serious.
Cheap.
Four-barrel.
They're expensive.
Carburetor. Anyway, there you have it. So that's good news. Anyway, we are in Barcelona, which is going to be great. I expect good weather. And, of course, the other side of the coin is, will Schumacher be happy again? The joy was gone a couple weekends ago in Turkey. And we want to see that come back. A lot of people say, you know, he's going to retire. He's going to leave the sport. He's depressed. He's old. Why is he here in the first place? I don't know.
No, and I think last weekend, or, you know, in Turkey, he wasn't having any fun. Get him a good car. Get him, you know, more middle field.
Ask Yarno truly how much fun he's having.
Exactly. It's all relative.
It is all relative.
You know, ask Mark Webber how much fun he's having, you know, because I'm sure he's got, you know, a lot of both. You know, hey, I got the second fastest car on the grid.
Well, Mark Webber is doing an outstanding job, and to be honest with you, if anybody needs to get a pole position and win a race, it's Mark Webber.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely somebody. I mean, he's the only one who really has an opportunity.
And if he doesn't do that soon, it will tear into his psyche.
Oh, and not only that, but not only his, but everybody else's. Because, you know, you're sitting there going, hey, if the guy with the same car can't get him, what does that mean for us?
Not only that, but then he'll be talking to Rubens Barrichello, Felipe Massa.
Maybe even send off a little phone call to Giancarlo Fisichella.
Fisichella. Bravo, bravo, bravo. So, yes, no, these things happen. The dominant driver, and some people are saying, this could be Vettel's
the beginning of his run. Schumacher-esque reign.
Correct. And the esque is definitely there. Dominant car at the front of the grid. You don't have to fight the mid-pack like Schumacher is right now.
Yeah.
It's a comfortable zone.
Oh, yeah, and it's easy. Easier to win races out there.
That's the whole
point. Than it is starting fourth or fifth.
Absolutely, absolutely. But still, speaking of Schumacher, Mercedes, of course, have said they are behind him 100%. And Ross Brawn believes that Michael Schumacher will be back in tip-top physical condition for España.
Yeah, I'm sure he will be. You know, he is nothing else but a professional, so.
He thinks that he is a resilient and machismo guy. And Ross Brawn is putting $100 down on Schumacher being in the top five. But we'll see what happens. A lot of people quoted the big joy, quote unquote, from Schumacher at the post press conferences at Turkey, and I think it got blown out of proportion.
Oh yeah,
as usual.
Well, you think about it. You know, he didn't have a really good race. He basically wasn't having a lot of fun that weekend. Of course, he's not going to. Talk to any driver who finished off the podium after that race, and they might tell you that there wasn't a lot of joy that weekend because they weren't on the podium.
Talk to Paul DiResta, his first DNF in Formula One. Yeah. And he had out-qualified Adrian Sutil the first four races, so he was, or first three races, or whatever. He wasn't that happy either. So,
talk to Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah, he was depressed.
Big time depressed.
Jenson Button, cry me a river.
You know, any Felipe Massa. It's like,
yeah.
Somebody had a trouble in the pits. Probably didn't have much joy that
week. Well, I think the big team to really come up with maybe some more new aerodynamics on the car is going to be Ferrari. They've got Fernando Alonso. This is sort of a home race for, well, it is a home race for Fernando, but for Ferrari, they've got a lot of passion going on in Barcelona. This is going to be a big one for them.
Oh, yeah. Another opportunity for them to take another small step forward or small step closer to Red Bull.
Of course. And then you have Jaime Alguersuari, another Spaniard. He is going to hope at his home Grand Prix to out-qualify and outdo Sebastian Buemi, which is going to be hard to do, but he's got to do it as well.
Yeah, he needs to. He, again, you know, like so many guys on the grid right now, they kind of need to show their teammates that, you know, they're competitive and that they can actually outdrive them on occasion.
And of course, especially when you have Ricciardo lurking in the background. Very interesting stuff. Let's go right to the other big story. And of course, that broke on F1Weekly.com last week was the Adrian Sutil
bar brawl,
whatever you want to call it. But it hit the regular press pretty like a day after we did the show. And Nasser found this lurking. You know, he found this way in the back, deep in the old files of some old Chinese
website.
Yes, and it was fascinating. But yes, it's all over the news now. Adrian Sutil is fighting for his name.
Apparently, criminal charges are being filed
in China.
In China.
Which is, I don't know how they handle it in a communist nation, but if I was Adrian, I wouldn't go.
No, I wouldn't be within two countries of China, frankly.
Yes.
You know, I might think twice about going to the Korean Grand Prix at this point.
But he does want to clear his name, and of course he is alleged to have physically harmed Eric Lux, the CEO of Renault F1, Genet Capital. I wish I was there to hear the conversation, the fly on the wall scenario. Apparently some champagne glasses or flutes were broken and stuff was flying, Steve. But and Adrian Sutil is one of the taller of the Formula One crew. And it's very bizarre.
Yeah, it really sounds, has that feel of something that was blown out of proportion to what actually transpired.
And I think, you know, he probably had a couple of Jägermeisters and didn't like this, you know, this French guy.
Or some Ting Sao.
Yeah, Ting Sao.
Ting Sao beer.
Exactly. I love Ting Sao.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I agree. So anyway, he says, quote, following the press statements issued on behalf of Mr. Eric Lux, it has come to our attention that he intends to submit a criminal complaint against Adrian Sutil regarding an incident that took place following the Chinese Grand Prix. And of course, this is by, you know, representatives of him thereof and afterwards. So it's going
to
be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where the Chinese authorities go with it, whether or not they even pursue it.
Why would they pursue it? It's a bar brawl.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is ludicrous. I think it's Lux trying to show he's machismo because he has egg on his face because a Formula One driver punched him in the knee.
In the knee?
Oh, whatever.
Probably just punched him lightly in the shoulder or
something. I don't know. But yeah, I think, you know, this should be settled
in the European back room. In the European courts or with barristers.
No courts. We don't need courts for barroom brawls.
Yeah.
I mean, we have bigger problems to solve. Please.
Yeah, knowing that it actually, unless Lux was severely injured, like as in maimed, then what's the point?
And the manly thing to do is for Adrian Sutil to call Lux and extend an olive branch and apologize. That's the manly thing to do.
Exactly. Steven. Maybe play him a little minuet on the piano.
Exactly. Free concert for the Lux family.
Yeah.
So
your next party, I'm there. I'm your man.
Yeah, exactly. And he's good, too.
Yeah.
So wouldn't be a bad party. Anyway, in other news, Kimi Raikkonen's NASCAR debut, which is happening this weekend, Steve.
Oh, no.
And
really?
Wow. I mean, I'm all set. I've got the hot dogs. I've got my, what are those burgers?
Bubba.
Thank you very much, Steve.
You can get them at Target.
Who?
They get them at Target.
They have them at Target?
Yeah.
So I'm getting my Bubba burgers
There are like five varieties. It's weird.
Whew. And apparently there's a big deal that NASCAR did with Sky customers in the UK, so everybody can watch our 2007 Formula One World Champion racing a Kyle Busch Motorsports Toyota in the Camping World Truck Series.
Do I have that right? Camping World Truck Series or something.
And of course, this will be in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Charlotte.
Yeah.
There in Charlotte.
And there'll be some cautions.
Well, truck races are full of cautions.
Are they? It's going to be great.
I mean, that'll be like Friday night?
Something like that. But anyway, Richard Webb from Premier Sports, who currently broadcasts the top-level Sprint Cups in the UK, he says, it's not that often that European drivers make the switch to NASCAR, and the media interest in this event is huge. We had a lot of requests from fans asking for this race, and it made sense to get
an agreement. Charge them $5 to see it.
Well, they got an agreement with NASCAR, and it is the ideal opportunity for both us to promote the sport while keeping our local and loyal NASCAR fans happy. So everybody in the UK will be sporting Budweiser shirts or Bush or whatever they do. And I'm serious. If I remember, I will try to watch Kimi Raikkonen.
I got to remember to
Camping World
Truck Series.
Truck Series NASCAR debut. So it's going to be exciting. And I'm my bet is, how long does he last?
Yeah, exactly.
Because
how long before a Bubba Bump drives him right out of the race?
We got some good old boys in there. And they're going to say, we don't like this dude.
For world champion, by
and yeah. We're just going to kiss the ball. We're going to show this Formula One guy who's boss. Exactly. Yeah. After about 15 Bubba Burgers and 44 beers. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Ooh,
you guys don't do too well against balls in F1, do you?
Yeah. Well, but don't forget, Kimmy's been in WRC.
Yep.
He knows how to bump and grind.
And his teammate was Juan Pablo. So yeah. He knows how to deal with somebody trying to run him over.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be exciting. And I definitely believe that the bookies are going to have a field day with this one.
Yeah, definitely. What are you thinking? It's either the pool on when he's out or where he finishes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be absolutely stunning. And where he qualifies. He's pretty quick. You know what? He might be closer to the front than you think.
I really wouldn't be surprised. You know, that we know from Formula One that the guy is a driving talent. He can get the maximum out of a car. So
I agree. So it's going to be very, very exciting. And of course, before we go to break, I want to mention we are going to have a new segment on our podcast. It's going to be, I think, once a month. And it's going to be exciting stuff, and it's going to be historical stuff about vintage Formula One races. And this is all for you guys, the listeners. More entertainment right here from F1Weekly.com. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, Motorsports Mondial and NASCAR will have more about this new history F1 segment that's coming up on F1 Weekly on a monthly basis. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Are you in business and want to make a hard-hitting visual impact that gets your name and message promoted? F1 Weekly knows from experience that the creative team of Caton Designs are graphic design geniuses and a company that can give your brand a visual pop in a cost-effective way. Contact Caton Designs at ketondesigns.com for visual messaging solutions that get your business image seen.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Karachi man, the dude himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and Booker T and MG regards. Brundle on pole, Magnussen wins in England, and Sato San wins in Germany. We shall explain gladly. But first, Mr. Rogers, I hope it's not true what I'm hearing. Apparently, rumors are flying based on a story in the Green Onion that since you are Francais, you may be leaving F1 Weekly to become the new head of IMF.
It's possible. The phone has been ringing.
So much for the donate button.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah. Busy racing weekend saw action in Formula 2 in Francia, Formula 3 in Holland, Germany, and England, plus Italy. World Touring Cars and World Series Renault were in Monza, MotoGP from Le Mans, and we will take a look at the racing life of Elio De Angelis, who tragically lost his life in a testing crash at Paul Ricard 25 years ago this month. We shall start with Formula 2 racing from Manicourt, Nivelles region of Vive la France. By the way, have you ever been to Manicourt?
Yes, I have.
Oh, really? For a race?
Yes, and you know what? They exaggerate when they say you could smell the cow manure.
But which race was this? French Grand Prix?
It was 99, I believe.
Formula 1 race?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Back in the day when I was a youth.
Oh, very interesting. Alex Brundle started the race from his first series pole position and then became victim of slippery when wet. Swiss driver Christopher Zanella was the winner ahead of German Tobias Hegewald. Brundle finished third, his first podium in the series. Alex also raced in Formula 2 in 2009, then went to British F3, and now he's back in Formula 2. But he's picking up pace now. And we're not talking about the sauce. Race 2 was more of the same, another win for Christopher Zanella, and this time from pole position. Brundle was second and Italian Mirko Bortolotti third. Zanella leads the championship 71 to 66 points over Bortolotti. Next round is at Spa in late June. And you've heard of Spa, right?
Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah, that's good. From Formula 2, we go to Formula 3, and they were all over the European continent. We shall start with the British version at Snetterton, Norfolk, region of jolly old England and very green region of England. Kevin Magnussen, son of Jan, had a big weekend winning two of the three races. In race one, he prevailed over pole sitter Felipe Nasr. Carlos Huerta of Colombia was third. Fortec Motorsports drivers occupied the podium in race two. Winner was Brazilian Lucas Foresti, and he is managed by Roberto Moreno. Our friend Harry Tinknell was second, and William Buller was third. Felipe Nasr was sixth. It's a shocker when Felipe Nasr doesn't win a race in a weekend.
I understand.
Third and final race of the weekend saw Kevin on top. Huertas was second. And Ricky, don't lose my number, Cristodulo was third. Cousin Felipe had a puncture and finished 17th after setting a new track record, 1 minute 39.93, which earned him a point. He extends his lead in the championship, so it's still good when he's not winning. From Norfolk, we go to the Netherlands. F3 Euro Series at Zandvoort. Victory for homeboy Nigel Melker, and he's also taking part in GP3, so he's a busy boy. Second was his Swedish teammate, Felix Rosenquist. Roberto Meri of Spain was third. Top three were all powered by a Mercedes engine. Japanese driver Kimiya Sato scored his first win of the series in race two in a Volkswagen-powered Dallara, and all cars are Dallaras. Third and final race of the weekend saw victory for German Marco Wittmann, a kid I know fairly well now, in a VW-powered signature team car, and we have been following Marco's career since his days in Formula BMW in 2008. He's a very good driver and a very consistent. Used to be once part on the Hülkenberg program under contract to Willy Weber. Also in action at Zandvoort was the German touring cars known as DTM. Canadian Bruno Spengler was again on pole for Mercedes. The race saw a maiden win for German Mike Rockenfeller in his Audi, who has raced quite a bit here in the American Le Mans series also. Spengler was second, and Martin Tomczyk made it two German Audi drivers on the podium. And Martin Tomczyk's Papito is some big mucky muck in German motorsport, I think, in the organization that manages the DTM. Eduardo Mortara, the only back-to-back winner of Macau F3 race was 6th. Ralf Schumacher was 11th and his friend DC 16th. You know, the good thing about DiResta coming into Formula 1 from DTM and doing very well, I think this is very good sign for the series that good drivers are there. And I think Eduardo Mortero is a very good driver. And I wish all of these people all the best. And, you know, the Formula One drivers, Grand Prix winning drivers who have gone there, like Ralph, DC, Mika Hakkinen, and Jean Alesi, it was no walk in the park for them, as we all know. From the sands of Zandvoort, we go to Sachsenring for German F3. Richie Stanaway, this is a name that we need to watch out. Richie Stanaway from New Zealand was the winner in race one. Marco Sorensen of Denmark was second, and Austrian Klaus Bachler. Now that's a German name, if there was one. Klaus Bachler, he was third. Israeli driver Alon Day was fourth. Second race of the weekend saw first win for Bachler. Sorensen was second, and Tom Blomqvist third. Stanaway was fourth and leads the championship with 56 points. Second is Sorensen on 52, and Bachler third with 28. Next round is early next month at Assen in Holland, track famous for MotoGP races. I would love to. One of the races I want to do, which are not Formula One, is the Assen MotoGP race. It's a huge crowd there. It's the oldest track for MotoGP racing. From Sachsenring, we go to the land of spaghetti and Giacobazzi. Sounds like a comment from Niki Lauda. For the opening round of Italian Formula 3 from Autodromo Francia Corta, 100 kilometers from the Autodromo in Milano, and I think you've heard of that. Monza, yeah, it's called. Yeah.
Funky place.
Yes, with an old banking, you know. Daniel Mancinelli was the winner of the first race. Eddie Cheever Jr. was sixth. This is Eddie Cheever's, Bambino.
I assumed.
Yeah, and Eddie Cheever used to be Junior himself, so will this be Eddie Cheever Jr. Jr.?
Yeah. Or Junior the second.
Like, and sponsorship from Lisa and Cartier.
Does it make him the third? Eddie Cheever the third?
That's true.
A junior's junior.
Like Thurston Howell the third.
Yes, there you go, open way, comes through.
That's beautiful.
Brandon Misano, here's another one of your homeboys. He was the winner in race two. Michael Lewis from L.A., which would be Los Angeles, not Louisiana, was third, and Cheever Jr. was fifth. And Brandon Misano is a young kid. We've just posted a story on him on the front page of F1 Weekly. And he is already in the Ferrari Driver Development Program. I think this kid has a very, very bright future. So hopefully we'll meet him one of these days. Next round is at Misano Adriatico in early June. Track is located near Rimini, which is the hometown of Signor Fellini. Signor Signorina, La Dolce Vita continues with Motorsports Mondiale and Monza for the World Series by Renault. Your favorite series, right?
Absolutely.
Race 1 on Saturday was won by rookie Kevin Korjus. He's from Estonia. Second win of the season. I'm calling him now Estonian Express. Out of control. This guy is really out of control. Jean-Eric Wynne was second, and Daniil Mauve, and apologies if I'm screwing up the name, of Russia was third. Dramatic battle in race 2 between two Red Bull drivers. Your homeboy Jean-Eric Wynne won the race on the track but was given a 10-second penalty for cutting two chicanes. This put him third on the podium behind Alexander Rossi and race winner Daniel Ricciardo. First win for the Australian this season. Jean-Eric Wynne leads the championship with 90 points. Rossi is second on 73. Canadian Robert Wickens, who I'm told may be announced as the Virgin driver at this weekend Spanish Grand Prix, he failed to finish this weekend. He is third in the championship, only 2 points behind Rossi. Ricciardo, preseason favorite who missed the opening round due to F1 duties, and I think he's going to miss more, is seventh in the championship with 54 points. 90 points for the leader, 54 for him. So I think this championship is going to be fought between Jean-Eric Wynne, Rossi, and Robert Wickens, just as we had predicted and expected. And it's going to be pretty brutal. And I do expect Ricciardo, Wickens, Rossi, and Eric Wynne to have some let's get physical kind of deals. It's brutal at the top.
I love it.
Yes, sir. Me too. Next round is in the streets of Monte Carlo with the big boys later this month. Now we move to volunteering cars in the Parco Monza. Double the pleasure for Chevrolet driver Robert Huff, who won both races of the weekend. In race one, he was followed in second by teammate Ivan Muller, and Thiago Monteiro was third in his Seat. The top two were the same in race two, Huff over Muller. Christian Poulsen was third in a BMW and Monteiro fourth. Huff and Muller are also 1-2 in the championship. Alain Menu of Switzerland is third. And I'm trying to look out for you if you get this new job at the IMF. Next round in Budapest, first weekend of June. And for the people who have been to the Hungarian Grand Prix, and just as a disclaimer, I have not been there. They have told me that the what's supposed to be the world's oldest profession is legal there.
The red light is on.
Yeah, the red light is on. Red light means go there.
Yes.
And enjoy. So if you do get the IMF job, maybe you can go to the... So instead of running down the hallway, you can be running down the paddock area.
Thank you, Master.
It's just a kid. It's a joke.
I have a coupon for Budapest.
And there you go. Two for the price of one?
Correct.
Fantastic. Now we move to Formula Renault NEC, North European countries. They were in action on the at the Nürburgring, and this kid is also out of control. Carlos Sainz Jr., very, very talented. He won both races of the weekend to lead the championship. 194 points to Robin Friens, our friend, who was on 153 points. Russian Daniel Kvyat is third on 141 points. And Russian Kvyat and Espanol Sainz Jr., they are both part of the Red Bull program. So there's a lot of... let me tell you, I'm beginning to feel sorry for the guys who were not winning races with Toro Rosso and Red Bull, if you know what I mean.
I know what you're talking about.
And it's coming. So far this season, check this out. Sainz Jr. has won 5 of the 7 races in the NEC version of the series. So he is well on his way to being upgraded from Muy Macho Hombre de Madrid to the Nuevo Muy Macho Hombre de España. And next stop, Assen, first weekend in June. So I'm very excited to see second generation drivers come who are really good, you know, not just hanging on, you know, like some cases we don't want to take names. They're not doing well. Like you say, they're just watching the birds.
Yeah. I like that. Isn't that the Leo?
Yeah, I don't want to get into the last
name. I always associate Leo with watching the birds.
Yes, Leo is lost. MotoGP news, Casey Stoner on a Honda won the French Grand Prix at Le Mans. The Australian also won the season opener in Qatar. Or Qatar, as the natives may call it. Fellow Honda rider Andrea Dovizioso was second, and Rossi got his first podium in third place on a Ducati, which is very interesting. Jorge Lorenzo, or as Rossi would say, Jorge Lorenzo was fourth for Yamaha. Ben Spies was the top Americano and sixth, just ahead of his Kentucky compadre, Nicky Hayden. The Norton name may be seen in MotoGP if their entry is accepted for 2012, and in, you know, next year the MotoGP bikes will be 1000cc. The sport section of Green Onion, they also have a Green Onion also has a sport section. It's very you know, it can put tears in your eyes. The sport section of Green Onion is reporting one entry has already been rejected, and this was from USMGP1. The team principals are well known in F1 circles, but MotoGP has declared them riders on the storm. And we all know that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Fowl. Okay, now we come to a new monthly segment, the Byfield Bypass. Are you excited about this?
I am excited.
You're his hero.
I mentioned the new historical segment is coming to F1 Weekly earlier in the program.
Absolutely.
And I said that you would maybe divulge a little bit more information.
Yes, sir. Lucien Byfield is a dedicated listener of F1 Weekly in Australia, and of course a longtime lover of Formula One. And each month we will feature what's on his mind about motor racing. It could be historical, it could be something, you know, whatever is on his mind. Today he will talk about one of the most memorable races for him and his favorite driver. I won't take the name, so take it away, Mr. Byfield.
Welcome to the Byfield Bypass from Australia with Lucien Byfield. You can call me Lush. I'm going to talk about my favourite things in Formula One, and today I'm going to start with the 1990 Mexican Grand Prix, in which my favourite driver of all time, Alain Prost, won from 13th on the grid. Now for him, that was an extremely unusual grid position, and made all the more bizarre as his teammate, Nigel Mansell, was right up the front. The McLaren boys, Senna and Berger, were there too, so Prost had a lot of work to do. Now, the whole 1990 season was amazing, even though it didn't go Prost's way in the end, or my way for that matter. But we all know how much love Senna and Prost had for each other after famously falling out at McLaren. And this was to be an on-track battle between the two of them, if only briefly. Now, I love this era. The start of the season had not gone Prost's way, despite a fortunate first win for him now with Ferrari on Senna's home turf in Brazil. But Senna had not had it all his way either. He was dominating the points and had early wins. But amazingly, Riccardo Patrese had a win in their Williams Renault. I can hear you, Clark. I love how you do that. Anyway, so Prost was about to begin a mid-season surge to end up leading the points chase after the British Grand Prix, which famously also saw Nige do his outrageous retirement drama. Back then, we had the personalities, the big tyres, the manual gear shifts on most cars, the way the onboard cameras showed how bumpy the tracks were, and the look of those cars. That 1990 McLaren was a sweet-looking thing, as was the Ferrari and the Leighton House cars that Adrian knew he had something to do with. Now, to the race. Berger had his second pole for the year. He was ahead of Patrese, Senna and Mansell. And it was Patrese who led away, but not for long, as Senna got him early on. Now, there's not enough time to go through all the details. But basically, towards the end, Prost had made up all the ground lost in qualifying, and it was Senna leading, but he was slowing with tyre issues. He'd had a gamble. Now, Mansell and Prost, both in Ferraris, were pushing him hard. And after Prost took Mansell, he then took Senna in one of those rare actual track passes he put on Senna since they had been teammates in 1988. This was like eating chocolate for me to see Senna displaced by my hero. Mansell was looking good for second, had a spin, came back, wheel banged with Berger, got the place, lost the place, etc, etc, etc. It was electrifying stuff. While all this was going on up the front, Prost was doing his usual, no nonsense, nothing spectacular looking, peaceful, and sometimes accused of boring style of racing. Whereas Berger and Mansell were doing the stuff of legend, banging wheels, racing hard, giving no quarter. And this was great from Berger, who was not considered to be that ballsy from some. Then came that final corner where Mansell just put his foot flat and forced Berger to back off or they would crash. Mansell's tyres were finished at that point and Berger had fresher ones, so the move was do or die to say the least, and he pulled it off. This was an amazing race. Look it up on the internet. You don't get too many like this. But to look back and see gorgeous cars, to see my hero win and to see Senna suffer a rear tyre puncture and then retire, it brings me a lot of nice warm fuzzies. At the time in Australia, we didn't have the coverage that we do now, and we had to wait a whole week to view this race. I was devastated because at one point we were told we weren't going to get to see it at all. Well, that's it for the Byfield Bypass today. Catch you all later next month.
Thank you, Lucien. The Pass by Mansell is one for the ages. Highly recommended on YouTube in case you missed this race. And I remember watching this race very well with my buddies. And what happens, these Prost and Mansell had stopped for tires, Senna did not. And then he had a huge lead where these people were, it was like that Hamilton in 2007 China deal, that they started closing on him rapidly, and he had enough time to come into the pits, and he may have lost the lead, but he would have stayed in contention. But you know, Senna being Senna, he kept going and going, and these people started keeping up on him, and when they got like within a second of him and or 2 seconds, then it was a lot of fun. His car was slipping and sliding all over, and both of them passed him, and then his tire went down, blowed out. But I remember the race very well, and then we had that Le Increable Nigel Mansell pass, which I saw on YouTube before coming here a couple of times, darting right, left, and on the outside, fastest part of the track, which the old Mexican Grand Prix track is one of my favorites, long, straight, and a lot of S's. So thank you, Lucien. Would you like to say something?
Absolutely. Outstanding race, 1990. It doesn't get better than that. And I do... thank Lucien for doing an outstanding job, and this will be a monthly segment, and I think the listeners are going to enjoy it.
Yes, and it's important that we bring more and more different accents, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So next we're looking for some listener in Korea to send us some, you know, give us to kimchi on motorsport scenes.
I love that.
Yes, Master, sir.
Keep up the good work.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Now some sad news to report. Race car driver Pete Lovely passed away last Sunday. He won the very first race at Laguna Seca in 1957. Also took part in some Formula One races with his own Lotus, entered under the name Pete Lovely Volkswagen, which was his business in Seattle, Washington. And, you know, talking on this sad note here, Earlier we talked about Misano track. This is the track where Wayne Rainey had his accident in 1993, which unfortunately ended his racing career. And it's amazing, you know, one thing leads to another. I went on the web to verify what year it was, and I was 99% sure it was Misano, but just wanted to double check. So next thing I know, I am on the website for the track, and I could not believe the address of the track is on Via Daijiro Kato. This is a street named in honor or memory of Japanese rider, you know, of the same name, of course, who was killed at Suzuka in the opening round of the 2003 MotoGP season. So it's, you know, it's interesting how one thing leads to another. Okay, sir, and now we're going to talk about Elio De Angelis. I am sure you remember him.
Absolutely.
I remember, you know, Clark, in long before he, before he came to Formula One. My uncle, who used to work for Castrol back home, he brought me like a sort of a Castrol newsletter. And I still remember the picture on the back page. There was a picture of De Angelis at Monte Carlo, and it says, Elio De Angelis, regarded by many as the next Italian phenomenon. And here we are talking about him 25 years after he was sadly killed. Okay, Elio De Angelis was killed on May 15, 1986 in a high-speed accident at Paul Ricca while testing Gordon Murray's low-slung Brabham BT55. You remember that car?
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. Like Francois Sauvé, he was a well-trained pianist, fast driver, and generally well-liked in the Piranha Pool, that is, Formula One. Elio was born in Rome on March 26, 1958. His father, Giulio, owned a large construction company in Rome and was active in powerboat racing. Elio's karting career was brief but quick. His raw talent and speed, mated with family money, brought him straight into Formula 3. He won his third ever motor race and won the Italian Formula 3 championship in his rookie year over Piercarlo Ginzani, you know, who used to be in Formula 1. He now runs a team in Italian Formula 3. So this was in 1977. 1978, Elio raced in Formula 2 and won the prestigious Monaco F3 race, in his, the one I was just talking about. And in his third year of racing, he was in Formula 1. So he had a pretty quick rise through the system. He made his debut in Argentina with Shadow Team and was one place shy in seventh to score a point in his first race. And then, you know, he moved to Lotus, and I believe if I remember correctly, he was sued by this guy, the head of Don Nichols of Shadow, because he broke a contract. A lot of drivers have done that. Elio moved to Lotus in 1980 and scored his first podium finish in Brazil, which would be his only podium for the season. Elio would spend another 5 years at Lotus. His day of days came in Austria in 1982 at the very fast Österreichring, where he held off a hard-charging Keke Rosberg in one of the closest finishes in Formula One history. Elio's first Grand Prix win was the last in the lifetime of team owner Colin Chapman, and this car is now in the custody of classic team Lotus. His best F1 season was 1984. It was winless, but 11 top 5 finishes helped him to third place championship behind the McLaren drivers Niki Lauda, who was champion in 84, and your homeboy Alain Prost. The 1985 season, he would finish 5th in the championship on the strength of 10 top 5 finishes. The record book also shows him as winner of the San Marino Grand Prix at Imola, and this happened after actual race winner Alain Prost was disqualified for an underweight car. Elio, who survived Nigel Mansell at Lotus, was not happy at what he would later call Peter Waugh dancing around new teammate, a driver by the name of Ayrton Senna, and left what he felt was no longer his team to join fellow Italian Riccardo Patrese at Brabham. And you know, I'm just as a piece of motorsport history and information, I was reading an interview with Keke Rosberg recently, I think it was in Motorsport magazine, and when Mansell, who was teammate to Elio, was coming to Williams, Keke was good friends with Elio, and he called him, you know, hey, what can you tell me about this guy? And he said, oh man, that Mansell is poison. After all, his thought was kind of strange. And you know what really got my attention, I was watching on YouTube the race that Mansell won shortly after Elio was killed. You know, he dedicates the win to Elio, and he's like in tears, you know, so life goes on, I guess. Okay, So he joined McLaren for, Brabham for 1986, Patrese as the teammate, and it was Patrese who was to test the BMW turbo-powered car after the 1986 Monaco Grand Prix. But Elio, after three successive retirements and races, requested Patrese if he could do the testing at Paul Ricard. Tragically, the rear wing came off and the Brabham left the track at high speed. The car turned upside down and caught fire. Elio was not badly hurt, but was trapped and could not get out. Alan Jones and Keke Rosberg tried in vain to help Elio. Since it was a test session, medical and safety facilities were bare minimum. Elio later died in hospital. Lack of oxygen was the primary cause of his death. And this was a needless death, much like the Ronnie Peterson situation at Monza in 1978. And I would request those who are interested in knowing, because of time constraint, we can do so much, but there is a website by a gentleman. It's called www.eliodeangelis.info. It has a lot of information, and those who are interested in more about his career, they also have posted a lot of interviews that Michael Dutson and other journalists, Italian journalists, have done, and most of it is in English. I would highly recommend. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes information. And the video of his Austrian victory in 1982 is also highly recommended. It was a great, great finish. So there you have it, a little remembrance of Elio De Angelis. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Nasser, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now let's go right to the wrap-up. And of course, we've got a brief forum update, Stephen.
Another brief one. We have decided that the forum updates need a change of format, but we don't know what to do yet. All suggestions are welcome, so come and visit us on the forums and let us know what you would like to hear going forward. Keep up the good work, guys.
The forum is exciting, and it's picking up as we get closer to Barcelona. And there's always great stuff on there.
Always stuff going on when it's in season.
I love it.
It's even off season.
Anyway, we do have an email.
Really?
Yeah, from a new listener. The name is New Listener. And he says, Nasser is the man. He should be the lead as he runs circles around Clark and Steve. Clark and Steve should go skipping off together, hand in hand, and do a podcast on unicorns and butterflies. Douchebags. There you have it.
Can we do it on fairies?
Yes, we could include fairies. Of course, no. Nasser is the dominant factor these days with some people.
With some people.
Yeah, which is fine. And so, you know what? I have a funny feeling that's a prank email from some listener that we know. But nevertheless, I read it because it was hilarious.
Funny.
Quickly, San Francisco Formula One Group, they're meeting this weekend at the Kezar Pub in beautiful downtown San Francisco, Sunday, May 22nd, pre-race is at 10 a.m., the flag drops at 10:30, you can go to Facebook and look for them, and RSVP, and the Kezar Club is at 799 Stanyan at Waller in San Francisco, which is a beautiful area, and of course, the famous Kezar Stadium is in that neighborhood. You can call them up and see what's on the menu at 415-386-9292. San Francisco Formula One Group. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines, and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, just go to CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend, or please just click like. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@f1weekly.com. We could produce beautiful ads with sultry lady voices or manly.
Annoyingly manly voices.
Manly voices. So there you have it. Thanks for listening and good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.